Breaking down the top NBA draft prospects across the globe, you're listening to the Prospect Podcast with Ethan Piotta and Alex Brown. And welcome back to another edition of the Prospect Podcast, episode number 5. My name is Ethan Piotta, joined today again by Alex Brown. Alex, how's it going today?
Hey, man, it's going well. I'm ready to talk bigs.
So we got, yeah, as we said, I think on the last episode, we have 4 more months of 2020 NBA draft class talk. But I'm actually excited about this episode because I think we've come to kind of a consensus that evaluating big guys is probably the easiest thing to do in terms of scouting NBA draft prospects. Just scoping out their potential and kind of, you know, what they could bring to an NBA team, at least for me, comes a lot easier than, for example, a 3-and-D guard or wing that has to add the 3 and the D to his game. Like, you kind of just know with a big guy what skills could translate and what potential upside he has. So that's why I'm excited to talk about this class, because I bigs in this class are kind of controversial. It's a guard-heavy draft class, if you will.
Yeah, definitely. They're very polarizing, I think would be the right word. You know, you got guys with Wiseman at 1. I've seen them at, you know, late 20s. So it's really polarizing. I think it's interesting regarding what you want your bigs to do and how people are valuing that.
Yep, so we'll talk about that. We'll basically just get into ranking our big guys in this class, and then kind of zero in on some of the most controversial ones or polarizing, like you said, if you will, in Vernon Carey, Daniel Oturu, Isaiah Stewart, and Zeke Nnaji, who I think are 4 guys with similar skill sets that normally end up around the same, what, like 20 to 45 spots on mock draft boards and whatnot. Those guys kind of interchangeable for some people. So get into them, and then just our value of big guys in the NBA. You know, the biggest thing I've seen talked about is the debate between, are you a regular season big guy that can provide minutes, or are you playoff capable? Can you stay on the floor when it actually matters?
Exactly.
Coaches are scheming to your weaknesses when there's stretch centers all over the floor and you have to, you know, expand your pick and roll coverage. Are you playable? And I think that's something that I'm excited to get into as well right after we dive into kind of our big guy rankings.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited about that too, because that's one of my favorite talking points about this crop of bigs, because I feel like there are a lot of guys that are not going to be playable in big playoff games that are going to get constantly exploited. So it'll be interesting to see how people value them based on that versus their regular season upside.
Agreed. So I think, you know, just starting at number 1, and this is pretty, it should be consensus. It shouldn't change before the draft. And I guess it depends on who you talk to, because some people could have Wiseman number 1, but Onyeka Okongwu, I believe, is far and away in his own tier in terms of big guys in this draft class. He's someone that has potential to play the 5 spot and maybe a little bit of the 4 because of his versatility. Coming in a little bit undersized, that's literally his biggest knock, is undersized and maybe a little bit of worry of can he stretch the floor, but he has everything else, and that makes him far and away the best big man in this class. And just in terms of his versatility, inside scoring, rebounding, he's going to bring a lot to an NBA team.
Yeah, I totally agree. He's my number 1 big as well. I think he's the safest bet when you're talking about getting a guy that's going to be a sure winner, like that's going to have a winning impact on both ends. I think he can do anything as far as, you know, he can play, finish. I know you said in high school he had a lot better shot, you know, had the confidence to stretch the floor. So I think he's really going to be – what most teams want in a modern 4 or 5.
Exactly, yeah. And there's kind of the Bam Adebayo comparisons out there. I don't think they're really the same player in terms of play style, but there are some similarities in, like, their short roll passing and defensive versatility in a way, if you will, maybe a little bit of rim protecting. But Okongwu is really the modern big guy that every NBA team should want and need, in my opinion, because I really think he's situation-proof. Wherever he goes, he'll be able to make a really solid impact because he is versatile on both sides of the floor. He is able to fit into a lot of different roles. And he is in his own tier for me. I don't know if you want to kick off number 2.
Same here. Well, Number two for me is Jalen Smith. And I've been historically kind of rather high on Jalen Smith. And when I was evaluating him, I came to a similar conclusion to Okongwu regarding what is he going to bring to a team. You know, he has that rotation rim protection. He has the outside shot that is far better than Okongwu's right now.
Right.
He has the motor. He has, you know, he's developing physically. He's getting bigger every day. The real knock on him is his lower body fundamentals and strength, which can be corrected. He's more of a project in his lower body compared to every other big, but I think it would yield huge dividends if you really could develop that lower body. And, you know, he's a smart, emotional player. He plays hard. He dunks on people. He does everything I like in my modern bigs as far as utility guys that can finish plays inside and out. And I think he's just going to be a really valuable NBA player.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, at least for me too, it's a kind of a toss-up between and my number two is Pokuševski. And I said if counted by it because we don't know what Poku's going to be.
He's a guard. I'm more
thinking of him as I trust me, I'm more thinking of him as a wing. But when I see Poku, and you know, there is a solid amount of potential. I would say that he is playing the four in the NBA at some point in his career. So you can count that as a big guy if you want. But moving on from Poku, I think we know how I feel about him. I don't really see his. I don't ever see him being able to play the five in the NBA. I know a lot of people don't either, just because of his lack of frame, and I just wouldn't necessarily just put him there. I feel like it would honestly take away from some of his skill set in a way. But the next three for me, and I'll start off with my number three, is Xavier Tillman, and they're all really interchangeable in my opinion. I'm kind of flip flopping on them every single day. Yeah. Super close on my boards. Xavier Tillman for me, Michigan State junior. This is a guy who probably has a case for being the most mature and surefire, decent impact on a low usage role player in the first round in terms of NBA big guys. He's going to come in and he's going to be able to fit into kind of like a Kongwu, any kind of role. And my biggest thing with him is, can he knock down outside shots consistently? Which I really think would just absolutely make him invaluable. And he's there mid first round. I'm pulling the trigger 100%, based off his kind of just well-rounded, skill set on both ends of the floor. Another guy like Okongwu, and really the biggest separation between them is age, honestly. And there's other factors such as, obviously Okongwu is a little bit more versatile defensively and probably a lot more springy than Tillman, but Tillman brings a sense of maturity that I really value in big guys. And he's someone I would 100% I'd 100% be comfortable with putting on the floor come May or April or whatever playoff time is, even as a rookie in the NBA.
I totally agree. And I think Xavier Tillman is a perfect example of why you should master the little things and the basic fundamentals, because there's a lot of value in that. And talking about guys that are going to have a winning impact, you know, he's near the top of the list for big guys for me. And, you know, I can see him fitting into that glue guy four kind of role and maybe small ball five in some situations, especially if he gets that shot down. But, you know, I love his archetype. I think it's really rare to have somebody with his smarts and maturity and a guy that can, you know, do all the intangible stuff. That's really valuable. He's a top five big for me as well. Just love his game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned it too, is that he's another guy that has potential to play the four or the five. And that, again, on its own is super valuable to me, is guys that can kind of fit into any role. And I think Tillman really fits the bill for that. Coming in at four for me is Obi Toppin. And this is another one out of those three that I mentioned. My fifth is Jalen Smith. But Toppin is someone that I know you have some strong opinions on, Alex. But, I mean, when you look at our draft boards, the first thing anyone notices is, okay, why is Obi Toppin, why is James Wiseman so low? That's that's the number one thing. Like, that's the instant first thing. That's always the first thing I get asked about. My thing with Toppin is I don't ever – like, some people are trying to, I feel like, argue that his offensive impact is going to just outweigh the complete liability that he's projected to be on the defensive end. Being already 22, 23 years old, I really don't buy him making any major improvements, especially with just his biomechanics and his awful hips and slow feet. I don't buy that change happening anytime soon. And honestly, I don't even think he'd have enough time. I don't even think he'd have enough time to make a change like that. So you're looking at someone that he's going to have to be an unreal, pretty much spotless offensive player to return any kind of value, in my opinion. And that's not someone that I'd want to be playing on the floor, you know, in big games where coaches are going to go to his weaknesses. And I don't really think he's someone you can hide on defense either, because I still don't know what's the best role for him to play on defense, because he really can't play drop coverage. I wouldn't be comfortable having him blitz or hard hedge or anything like that either. So I don't know where you'd put someone like that on defense. And that's kind of why I'm a little bit lower on him. I still have hope for his offensive upside. And he's an interesting player too, because you see Toppin, and probably the first thing most casual people are looking at is how could his athleticism, how could his movement ever be an issue? He jumps out of the gym. And it's just completely different in terms of his vertical pop and his lateral movement.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as far as the issues on defense. I think he's going to be a complete liability. I can see him being attacked heavily in playoff situations from every position. If you switch, you're going to have one hell of a defense if you're going to be able to mask him at all. You know, guys that can fight switches so he doesn't have to. And I just see it being so situational that he ends up as a winning player despite his offensive, his offensive versatility, his scoring package, his play finishing, which is all great. But, you know, if he gives up a point for every one he scores, he's not really that valuable.
And are you drafting him to be your one of your primary scorers on offense? Absolutely not. No, you shouldn't be. And if you are, then you're going to be in the lottery again next year. And that's unfortunate, but it's true. And so that's why I wonder how much value can you possibly return on offense? Not like he's a 40%+ three-point shooter or anything like that, at least. And that's kind of just my reasoning on that end, is he's going to have to reach his ceiling extremely early on a fast track, and that's just on the offensive side of the ball, to return any kind of possible value. And that's the biggest thing that worries me about Toppin, and that's kind of why I've started to move Smith over him and pretty comfortable.
Good. Now. Yeah. Yeah, that's I'm fully on board with that. Been that way. I think he's 11 spots higher on my big board right now compared to Toppin.
Jalen Smith, number 5 for me, and we kind of talked about him. My biggest thing is with Smith, I do worry about how he does play. And I know you've kind of even masked my worries on this a little bit, about how he kind of does play stiff in a way, and you do worry about that lower body a lot. But the more and more I watch him play, the more and more I think about Jalen Smith and his potential role, it's going to be hard for him to fail in the NBA. And that's really always a good thing to me. I really don't think someone with his skill set is just going to be out of a job, if you know what I mean. Like, he's going to have somewhere to play, and probably in a really solid role. And that's honestly the fundamental difference. He's younger than Obi, and he's on a little bit of a better development curve than most bigs around his area as well too. I mean, he made some massive improvements to not only his body, but just his overall skill set this year.
He really did.
I'm a big fan of him. I don't know why anyone would have Jalen Smith out of their first round, in my opinion. I think
I see it all the time too.
I can't get behind that at all.
I swear. I don't know what it's from. I don't know if they just haven't watched enough film on him, but he does everything you want in a modern big. It blows my mind how slept on he is for some reason. But yeah, I'm pretty comfortable with him in my lottery. Go through my top 5, of course, Okongwu at 1. I have Jalen Smith at 2, which is probably our biggest difference as far as the top. Then I have Poku at 3. And then this one I noticed was definitely different. was I have Tilly at four, good old Killian Tilly. And I know the injury issues are really, they're notable.
Extensive.
To say the least. I have a report coming out on him soon. And I was going over his injury report and I was like, I mean, has a guy ever been healthy?
Yeah, it's tough.
Really don't know. But if he is healthy and when he's even at like 65% in his words, like he is one of the most impactful bigs I've seen at the collegiate level. He has, again, kind of everything you want in a modern big except for vertical threat. And that's mostly because of his injuries. Like when he's kind of healthy, he has some spring, especially off 1 foot in space. But, you know, he can shoot, he can pass, he can handle the ball. He can rebound a little bit. He can, you know, get a steal and block every now and then. And he's just a super high IQ, high intangibles guy that I really, really like. He's one of the guys I watch that is occasionally laughably good compared to other people. And you know, as a three-level scorer and, like, pick and pop or pick and roll specialist, like, his efficiency is off the charts. And I think his floor is – his floor, considering no injuries, so if he were to stay healthy, his floor would be an impactful role player on a good team. Yep. Like, I don't see a way he fails that's not injury-related. And if he reaches his ceiling, he could literally start in a playoff team. There's no way around it. He's versatile on defense, except he just can't really protect the rim that much. But he can defend in space, play the modern four. I love Tilly's game, and I'm praying for his health.
I mean, yeah. He's a joy to watch. Yeah. And, like, it all depends on his health, because I firmly believe that he's probably number two or number three for me easily if there was no injury history. He's one of the most skilled players in this draft alone. You just don't see many 6'10 big guys that can put it on the floor like he can, that can impact the game like he can. I mean, his passing ability is ridiculous. His vision is uncanny for someone of his size. And
he's developed that too.
Exactly.
Like, it wasn't always that good, but I mean, it's gotten even better. And he can be a guy that can pick teams apart with his passing. And having that in a big guy is really, really valuable, especially like a glue guy like him.
Yeah, it's a lost art just being able to pass out of the double team like he's able to, or pass out of the post in general like he's able to. That opens up – I mean, that's an amazing scoring opportunity for your offense every single time he has the ball. And he doesn't have to – again, another guy doesn't have to have the ball to make an impact on the game.
Absolutely.
I think he kind of just finds ways to affect winning. And that's what I really love about Tilly. And the biggest thing is I really just wish he was healthy and could stay healthy. Cause he's, like you said, super fun to watch.
Yeah. Big fan of Tilly. Number five for me, I've been back and forth between Wiseman and Tillman here. They're one spot behind each other on my big board and they alternate a lot. So
yeah,
I think Wiseman has value as a play finisher. I know we've kind of discussed him before on previous episodes, but definitely has some value as a play finisher and rim protector. And, as a roll man, he can shoot the ball a little bit. But he's the opposite of Tillman. His intangibles are bad. You know, his effort is low. His, you know, commitment is questionable. His basketball IQ is not where I'd like it to be. But he has all the tools, like the physical tools, to really be a good NBA five.
And more.
And Tillman's the opposite. He has all the intangibles. And I love Tillman's game for that. You know, he does everything well, like we said. Just want him to shoot a little bit. But it reminded me of Simon's question the other day about, if you could give somebody in this class
Great point, the skill set
of somebody else, I would give Wiseman Tillman skill set. You know,
It's a great point.
Yeah, they're very polar opposites though, and you know, I value them both differently, but definitely a fan of both of those guys, five and six.
Wiseman's six for me, and he's someone that, you know, we've talked about him a lot. I've talked about him since the first episode. He's been a topic of discussion because he's extremely polarizing for a lot of people. And I feel like I want to move him up a little bit more because watching him more off the court, he does seem like someone that could be a capable learner. But I just don't know if he embodies, the physical certain physical characteristics to get the job done. Like, I don't know if his load time will improve or his second and third jump will become quicker because it's abysmal right now, and it's something that's going to get him fouled out of games in 3 minutes in the NBA.
Yeah, his anticipation too, alongside that, is really what
doesn't have a great feel for the game, in my opinion, and that's something that is worrisome to me. Because you want your big guy at least, to have, if he doesn't have a great feel for the game, I'd at least like him to just be a natural born, shot super blocker athlete. And super athlete, but he does have limitations that although he is 7'1", 250 and can run the floor like a madman, when you get down to kind of the micro half court part of the game and you're analyzing, how fast does he go from this block to rotate, interior defensive rotate and get off the ground to block a shot and, know when to wall up and not leave the ground. It's tough. He doesn't necessarily have the feet or the hips to do that. But I do like, he does seem like a really good guy in a way, just from watching his Mike Schmidt's interview. He does seem like someone that, could be coachable, could be a capable learner. I just don't know why you'd ever use a top five pick on him. Like, I couldn't fathom using a top five pick on a guy that isn't going to give you immense value, especially in a playoff setting.
Yeah, he's very much a project. And I'm just not sure if he's, when I look at projects, I like to see, okay, what's their work ethic? What are their intangibles, ability to learn? I just haven't seen enough to really buy into that with him. Like, I don't see a lot worth investing in as other than his physical tools.
But,
he does. He will have value at the very least as a play finisher and physical presence as a rim protector. And that's a good floor to have for the modern game. But it's not a high enough floor to be a top five player or top five selection in my eyes.
Agreed. Yeah, it's just there's. And we've talked about it before, so I know this might sound redundant, but I just don't think he'll return enough value and affect the game in a big enough way. Seven for me, though, Killian Tilly, we kind of talked about him already, so I'll bypass Tilly. Eight for me, though, is Zeke Nnaji, who I'm a super big fan of. And I probably will continue to move him up a little bit more. And we've talked about Nnaji a little bit too in the past. I think I even brought him up on the sleepers episode because for a period of time, I was kind of getting the vibe that he was someone that was being underrated. And I still think he is a tad bit underrated because he's a big guy that out of the four guys who we're going to talk about in a little bit, Vernon Carey, Isaiah Stewart, and Daniel Turu, I think he has the best chance of being an impactful pro out of all of them. And that's based off his motor and his kind of, I think he has great versatility on the defensive side of the ball. I liked what I saw from him defensively at Arizona. He's a good inside finisher, and he's someone that I would love to see expand his range. I think he has translatable shooting skills, 83% free throw shooter, I believe, this year. And didn't take many threes, but was competent shooting the mid-range, off the pick and roll, kind of a pick and pop guy at times. Good passer.
It's like a
nice
short
feet.
Pop.
Yeah. And I think that's value. I think he's someone that I could easily see being an impactful player in the NBA. Cause another too. Guy impacts the game without the ball in his hands.
Yeah. I'm a fan of Nnaji as well. He's my number seven, big in this class. And, again, he has really great tools, 6'11", 230, 240. At least that's what he's listed as. Could be lighter. His length is all right. The only thing I really worry about with Nnaji is his lack of production as a rim protector. And he could get kind of muscled around a little bit. I don't know if he's going to be a true five. I think he could be an okay small ball five. But he's kind of that tweener a little bit. And at least right now, he is still young and can fill out. I love his intangibles. I love his motor. I'd like to see the rim protection numbers go up because they're not projecting that favorably, surprisingly. but I do love his game. I love his character enough to buy into, you know, developing him physically and all that other jazz. But definitely a big Zeke Nagy fan. I think he has slept on a little bit. He's in my top 25 right now, which I think is rather high for him based on the mainstream boards I've seen. But yeah, he's going to be a valuable player.
Agreed. I have Precious Achiuwa at 9, has kind of been talked about. And I know even like our guy Zach is super low on Precious, but I just still think you can't discount his potential on the defensive side of the ball. And I know he's a little bit older than normal freshmen would be. I think he's 20 and a half, maybe could be 21 coming near draft time in terms of his draft age. But he has potential to be a really insane defender on the defense, on the defense side of the ball, in my opinion. There's just extreme worries about obviously basketball IQ and shot selection and what will he do on offense actually, because he really can't shoot and he struggles finishing, but he shows flashes of being able to do all of them. So he's another really polarizing guy, interesting prospect. And I kind of just buy him middle of the road. I think his best bet will be to go to a team that can minimize his role in a way, which could then maximize his value. And I think that best benefit Precious Achiuwa.
Definitely. I think the small ball 5 is his future.
Agreed.
I'm a lot lower on Achiuwa. I think he's probably in, I think he's 11 or 12 for me, just because I don't really like buying low field guys that could be tweener small ball fives. You know, it's and the free throw percentage is not encouraging for his touch. I just struggle to buy his like the package he gives based off of his IQ, and you know he has a good motor, but I just can't stand the decision making at times.
Yeah, and a lot of it could have been just like the role that he was in at Memphis, which I feel like he amplified a little bit too often. And maybe in an NBA setting, it could change. But like you're right, like it's kind of infuriating at times watching some of the decisions that he was making offensively. I still will not discount his defensive versatility, because I really do think he could be a freak on that side of the ball at the very least, which is valuable in any kind of setting to any NBA team. Before you round it out is Eve Pons, and I'm obviously just a huge Eve Pons guy. Kind of similar to Achiuwa, but I mean, just an insane freak athlete. This is a guy who made improvements this year to his game as well. A perimeter threat. We'll still see if that can translate, if he can keep that up. But he's on a really nice development curve, and he's someone that I'm just praying goes to the Houston Rockets as their small ball 5. I've officially made that my favorite second round fit, is Eve Pons as the Houston Rockets small ball 5 next year, because his defensive versatility is pretty crazy, and his shot blocking ability, obviously. I don't think he'll ever be someone that can straight up guard a big guy like Joel Embiid or one of the top tier big guys, but maybe could hold his own for a couple minutes a game as a small ball 5, and then have potential to guard wings or fours on the defensive side of the ball for the rest of the game. So I think he's versatile, and he's another guy who's a project, but someone who could offer value in the right situation, definitely.
Yeah, he definitely could. I kind of classify him as a combo forward, so he's not on my list of bigs. But the rest of my my top 10, so to speak, I had Nagy at 7. I had Toppin at 8, which is, you know, kind of due to the defensive issues, which I am very much worried about regarding his playability in the playoffs. He'll produce points. He'll, you know, get his rebounds and his flashy dunks, but I don't know if he's going to impact winning a whole lot. And then after Toppin at 9, I have Paul Reed, who I think is he has some intangible issues. I get the sense he's a really high ego guy, that's going to demand the ball a little bit. I want to be in a high usage role, but that can also drive improvement. And he is quite productive on the glass and on in the stocks category. You know, he was getting 7 blocks some games and 7 steals. Like, right. he was insanely productive when he was hunting for it. And, you know, there's some value there with his tools. He just really needs to refine his skill set and get his mind in the right spot. And I think he could provide value. But 10 for me, who is on the rise, is Isaiah Stewart. And I'm starting to see what, you know, some of the NBA guys are buying in him regarding his – I mean, his intangibles are awesome. You know, from every account, everyone's like, we want this guy on our team just for the locker room presence because he's, you know, that much of a good teammate. And, you know, he drives improvement. So that's awesome, first of all. And I always want to root for those guys. But when I was really concerned about his defense beforehand, but compared to, like, Obi Toppin's, it's not as big of a deal. Yeah, so right. I kind of felt like I was overemphasizing his negatives when I wasn't applying the same to Toppin. So definitely on the rise with Stewart. I think he can score at all three levels. I hope his jumper continues to develop, give him range and versatility as a pop threat as well. He has superb hands. You know, he has power. He has a quicker lower body than it seemed initially to me. You know, excellent post defense, great strength. I think there's a lot to like in Isaiah Stewart, and I think the perfect spot for him, I think the first round may be where he goes, but I mean, if he's in the second round, like early, I'm picking him, I think, just because he's going to provide a winning impact, at least off the court and on the offensive end. Agreed. I still have questions about his ability to defend in space, but
yeah,
the intangibles are worth buying into. And he could definitely rise up my board past like top end as this process continues before my final board is out.
Right. And I Isaiah Stewart's a super interesting guy. And I'll get into him when we discuss those four guys a little bit more. But someone that, you know, his motor alone is, you know, extremely enticing. You're 100% right that every team should want a guy like that in their locker room. He's always seemed to it doesn't look like it's something that's just newfound and he put on like a mask at Washington either.
Yeah.
Watching him play for the USA team, watching him play in high school at La Lemire, like he kind of kept that same energy anytime he stepped on the court, which is really indicative to me of just the person that he is off the court and the player that he is on the court. So, I mean, he's definitely someone that I'm it's just – it's so hard to watch Washington just sticking him in the middle of that zone. But, you know, getting through those games, I just – you know, you wish you could get a little bit more of a feel for his defense. Right now, I'm still going to label it as a complete negative in terms of just guarding people in space. And I don't think that will change. As much, you know, because even just watching him in high school, he was not competent guarding the pick and roll. And you know, you can't
put he really
an
wasn't.
immense amount of stock into it. But, you know, like if you're sticking him in the 2-3 zone, it's kind of a disservice to him. You would have liked to at least like to see him struggle and try different screen coverages or, you know, whatever this year. But, I mean, unfortunately, he's stuck in that 2-3 zone. So. That's my kind of thing on Stewart. I went a little bit longer than I thought I would. Hey, I just totally, had some thoughts.
Yeah, totally get it. And I think the concerns are completely valid and still something I'm evaluating to this day. But when I was watching it, I don't think he's going to be as negative as Toppin. And considering people are overlooking that in Toppin, I think it'd be kind of biased to not overlook it in Stewart, since he can do a lot of the same things without the high flashy dunks and all that. So just an interesting thing to consider moving forward, evaluating his defense and considering he has such great intangibles.
And if you're listening and you're probably thinking, well, Obi Toppin's offensive like scoring package, like we've been mentioning, is just far greater than what Isaiah Stewart's
really
going to bring.
Good.
and that's completely true. But like, honestly, you really have to think about, is Toppin going to have as, you know, free of a reign as he did at Dayton his first few years in the NBA? Absolutely not.
Perfect system.
Absolutely not. Like, there's no way he's going to have the free reign to just take shots off the dribble, post up, and kind of make plays happen like he did at Dayton, which was extremely fun to watch. But it's just not going to happen in the NBA. It's just not how it works.
Correct.
And so you really kind of have to wonder, is Stewart's – one of Stewart's biggest strengths, one of his biggest proficiencies, is his inside scoring. He's a beast around the rim. He attacks the rim super well, and he's, you know, he's tenacious, especially on the offensive glass. You got to wonder, you know, is Toppin's impact going to be that much far greater than what Isaiah Stewart can potentially bring in even a limited, probably more team-friendly role in terms of just his impact on the offensive side of the ball? It's something that I've been thinking about, and it's certainly interesting. And Stewart's got some years on him as well, so he's a little bit younger.
Yeah, I was about to say, by the time Stewart's rookie contract is up, you know, this year, after he gets drafted alongside Toppin, he will be the same age that Toppin is now once his rookie contract is up, theoretically, or around the same age, within 1 or 2 years, you know, error. But, and that, you know, that's pretty valuable to think about. You know, you're like, is he going to be that much better in a couple of years? So, you know, Stewart's creeping up there, and he might pass Toppin for me.
That's very interesting. It's interesting, and it's honestly, like, it's a good point to talk about, like, just projected impact, because I don't really see a spot where, I mean, I won't change on this, I don't really see a spot where Toppin's going to be this insane offensive player, and, like,
me neither. You know,
in terms of value, I say Stewart's a little bit more situation-proof. I'm hoping he goes to a good system, because I think that's where he'll thrive, his defensive liabilities might be able to be masked, you know, with a good system, with a good coach, you know, whatever. So I'll rattle off my next five without really pushing too much dialect on them, because we're kind of getting into some sleeper guys. But 11 for me, at least at the point right now, is Vernon Carey. Nathan Knight at 12 for me. I've been super big on him. I really still think he warrants a draft spot. You just don't see 6'10 guys like him that can put the ball on his floor, you know, put the ball on the floor, score on all three levels. I mean, he's someone that, you know, watching William and Mary this year, he's someone that is grabbing rebounds and taking it coast to coast almost every single time. And his skill set alone is just, it's so tough, because whenever we do like a mock draft or anything like that, I never can find the right fit for him. And that's probably how it's going to end. It's probably indicative. It's probably going to end up how it's being in the NBA, but he's someone who can make some serious noise in the G League, I think, his first year.
I think he's just crazy productive in the G League.
Absolutely. And someone that, you know, even on a little bit of a development curve, you know, with the right team, with the right system, could be a solid role player contributor at the peak of his career, which is I think, a lot more than you can say about some of these guys. So
interesting.
13 for me, Marko Simanović. 14, Mamadi Diakite. And 15, Isaiah Stewart. And those kind of all five right there are just interchangeable, pretty similar spots on my big board as well. And we talked about Stewart. So I mean, I don't know. I think that's a pretty good crop of guys to pick from in the mid to late second round, at least from what they're projected on my board. And, you know, those guys, their position fluctuates on, you know, it depends on who you talk to.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Going through mine. My next five, 11 for me is Omer Yurtseven, who I've been an Omer stan for quite a while, so everybody kind of knows my view on him. I think his skill set is misutilized. I did a report on him a while ago. Big fan of Omer. I think he can be an impactful NBA player. And then I have, I got Precious at 12, but I'm definitely considering lowering myself on him. I have I have Lamine Janae.
Okay, I see. For Lamine, you kind of mentioned as a big. I view him kind of like almost how you viewed pawns in terms of that combo. Same way with Reed. So that's why I left those two off. They would be a lot, I think, higher for me.
Okay, and then I have the three. My next three are the three play finishers rim protectors. They're Udoka Azubuike, Kyler Kelly, and Nick Richards in that order. All of which I feel have a chance to be a third, potentially second in some cases, center on a team that can finish plays, protect the rim, you know, be adequate role men. But they're going to start in the G League. I think they have NBA chances if they can improve, because they do what you want in a low usage center, but right. They're not skilled enough to be like a starting set, you know, so.
Or even a backup.
They can't shoot free throws to save his life. And, you know, they all have their issues. You know, Nick is soft. And so it's important to know. And so I like those guys as play finishers, you know, third center guys. And I think that has value, especially in undrafted, if you can find an NBA center.
I think we talked about it too. It's just like that third NBA center role on a roster is somewhat important just with how injury prone generally big guys are. I mean, I even remember, like, just going back to the Sixers again, like, you know, you have Embiid go down in the first round of the playoffs, and the backup center, you know, position battle in Philadelphia was always ridiculous because it was Amir Johnson. He was 37 years old. He couldn't move his feet. So he was starting. And then next thing you know, Greg Monroe's coming up and he's starting a playoff game for the Philadelphia 76ers like a year ago. So, I mean, that's something that, you know, bit them in the butt. Greg Monroe was awful in the minutes that he played. And if you're able to find kind of even that young Rashawn Holmes-like, you know, springy guy that can come in and play finish, like you said, and impact the game.
Protect the rim.
Even, yeah, right. A great impact player that I saw this year was Norvell Pell. I think he was really solid in that third center role. But if you're able to find someone like, you know, even a Diakite or Azubuike, or Guy Osasu or Kyler Kelly, I know who you're high on. You know, you could bring either three of those guys, four of those guys in, and they could impact a roster positively in that kind of role.
Yeah, because that's what their skill set is designed for, is to come in and not be a high option guy, just to be a competent big that's going to at least, you know, give guys like Embiid problems, or, you know, not just give up easy buckets. So I think they do have value, and I think that's one thing I would definitely pursue in the, you know, in the undrafted crop if these guys all do go undrafted, because, you know, they're valuable to teams, and getting them on a two-way deal and bringing them up when you need them is going to be their fit.
Agreed. Just a few guys I want to get to before we dive into those, to the championship four. But one guy I know we noticed we didn't mention was Caleb Wesson. Yeah, he's 16 for me as well. I want to know what your opinion is on him, because he's kind of an interesting prospect. I mean, he doesn't jump out the gym by any means, and he really doesn't have, you know, insane athletic ability. But he did demonstrate some, you know, reliability from outside this year, and he's a really, really good passer out of the post and out of the double team. He's kind of an interesting guy and someone that could, you know, I think probably his spot would be as a G League developmental player, but someone that's interesting and had a good senior year with the Buckeyes this year.
Yeah, and I take that back. He's 18 for me. 16 for me is Yoeli Childs, who also is kind of similar to Wesson as far as he's a guy that can stretch the floor. He shot like 48% from three or something ridiculous. Like rather low volume. Yeah, it can be a pick-and-pop threat, rebounds well. Not a superb athlete, you know, struggles to defend in space, but he's going to be a productive G League guy, could go overseas and be a highly productive guy as well. So, you know, those guys have some value too. And I also just want to point out where I am on Vernon and Oturu before we talk about those guys. They're 17 and 19 for me, respectively. And yeah, I also like Osasu, your guy, and one guy I would stay clear of is Reggie Perry for intangible issues, but he's also quite skilled.
he's quite skilled, yeah. But I have heard of the off the court issues with Perry being kind of the big knock on him. And I just don't think he'll provide enough value to – I don't think anyone could provide enough value to kind of make up for that. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I don't know. That's a good point. Probably steer clear of him when there's other decent options at the end of the
second round. That's what I would advise.
Absolutely. So, Carey versus Oturu versus Isaiah Stewart versus Ignaji. And I just – where do you rank each four of these individually? And what's – I would say, what's the main difference between each four? Because at least for me, it starts out with Najee at the top. And then it's probably a coin flip between Carey and Stewart. And then Oturu is a little bit below both of those guys. Don't know what to do with Vernon Carey because, you know, he's someone that I don't want to just discredit fully because he did put up just insane numbers this year at Duke. But there are just concerns about his, you know, want to play. He reminds me a lot of Jahlil Okafor in a bad way coming out. And this is now 5 years in a completely different and new and improved NBA. And so, you wonder how Okafor could possibly go to number three over someone like Kristaps Porzingis, who was right there on the board, and you could have had Embiid and Porzingis. It's tough to watch Vernon Carey play basketball, quite honestly, like at some points, and just his lack of effort on the defensive side of the ball.
Low IQ on the defensive side.
Right. And I think we've even talked about there are some off court issues there that I'm sure teams are taking note of. The scoring's there. One thing that I will say is he is a pretty insane straight base vertical leaper. Just off 2 feet from the ground, you wouldn't think with his frame and body type that he could get up as high as he does, but he does jump pretty damn high for a guy of his size.
That's interesting.
I'd like to see his like combine numbers and whatnot. But that's one thing I noticed, that he does get off the ground pretty fast for someone of his size, which could provide some kind of value, maybe a little bit of upside. He's still young.
That's interesting, the point you made about his standing vertical. Because that's not something I've noticed. I always kind of thought, you know, as a rim protector and post finisher, he's kind of more ground bound. But I'll have to look for that next time I watch, because that popped to me. But if you have any film, definitely send me that, because I would be curious to look at that.
I think I do. It's been weird instances where he gets off the ground, whether that's for a lob, or I remember even just there was a play, Cassius Stanley drove to the right side, threw him a lob, and I literally have written down, is that he gets off the ground pretty fast for someone of his size. It's definitely interesting, and I'd like to see the numbers if they are to come out. Despite his frame, gets off the ground kind of fast, which hinted at some potential upside, I guess.
I'll have to think about that moving forward. But, to rank my guys, you know, I'd go Najee number one right now. I could see Stewart having a chance, but the real difference between the two is I think Najee has a lot more potential to defend in space. He's not perfect, but I think the upside is there. The motor is there, and the physical tools are there as well. And he's not like a full-on rim protector either. So I think that his key to success will be defending in space, if he can really figure that out. And that's why he's the highest for me right now of that crop. And I'm a Najee fan. Like I believe in the kid. I think he's got all the intangibles to make it. Similar reasons for Stewart at two for me. I just think he's the kind of guy that's going to make it. It's going to provide a winning value. I really dove into it earlier. But I definitely am rising on him. For the third one, Vernon Carey and Daniel Oturu are quite far down on my board. I might prefer Oturu because I think Oturu actually has some rim protection.
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit as far as production and such, but he cannot defend in space at all. And I hear guys saying, why do you not like Oturu? He just gives up in space. It's terrible to watch. It's
the effort isn't even there half the time, especially in pick and roll coverage too. Like he just is not just flat out just is not in the right place. And like, yeah. It literally seems like it's not inadvertent. Like it seems like he's actually like trying to stick with the big to mask him, like himself in space sometimes.
Yeah. He's just I can't stand the intangibles defensively. I can't stand the decision-making, the effort. I don't think he'll defend in space. He at least has potential to have some value as a rim protector just because of his, he has decent tools and, but a lot of that was paint camping, So I'm still really low and I would steer clear unless you want him on a G League, as a two-way guy, kind of similar to Kelly and all that, just so he can finish plays and protect the rim and hit threes, which I think is, pretty valuable for him. Be a pick and pop threat.
Yeah.
But I just don't see the defense there with Carey either. I'm just not a fan of him as a person or, from what I've seen at least, obviously I'm not acquainted with him or anything, but I just, I can't really buy the intangibles. I always think of him, I remember him dunking on a kid shorter than me, in the 5 foot range. And just staring down like he was, the guy. I was like if you need to do that, you're just.
So yeah, and on Carey too, it's just I just wonder what kind of value him and Arturo could bring to an NBA team. And I'm not trying to bash on them either. It's just their skill set, at least from what I've evaluated, both are just not projected to be, positive impact players. And that kind of gets into the value too that, we talked about is the value of big guys in the NBA right now. Is it, regular season impact guys or is it playoff capable guys that you value higher? We've kind of talked about that. But at least for you, what's your ideal big guy? What does he bring to the table in terms of just impact?
Well, I'm definitely, just to set the table for it, I'm definitely a guy that you need to be able to be on the floor in the playoffs. Because if you're not going to be a winning team, what's the point of trying? Exactly. I just can't buy the philosophy of only regular season guys as far as production, But so what I like in Diggs is I like a high feel. High IQ, and this is, I'll be realistic. I won't make the perfect big here, of course, but I like a high feel, good decision-making. I like a guy that can finish plays inside and out, as a pop threat, as a role man. They don't need the ball in their hands a lot because I don't really like high usage bigs because they don't really, there's very few in the modern game that have a lot of success.
Right.
It's like what Tilly and Smith bring to the table, as well as, Okongwu, if he could shoot, basically. That's what I like.
I agree.
And if you can protect the rim and defend in space, as versatile as possible defensively, and then just finishing plays inside and out. If you can create – I don't really think having a creator as a big is that valuable. unless it's in Nikola Jokic or – Giannis, I just couldn't. I don't need that.
Agreed. So
finishing inside out, defending versatile, protecting the rim, high field, good decision maker. That's what I would want because that's the kind of guy you can put in a playoff situation on any team.
I tend to value guys that are good, you said decision makers, and I tend to value guys that are good. I tend to value guys that are good decision makers with the ball in the short role. I think that's super valuable to a lot of NBA offenses, and that's kind of why my philosophy is okay. Let's base Okongwu and Tillman and all those guys super high, because I think they provide that kind of value. And like you said, I've been through my share of it. There's a huge difference between a regular season big man and a playoff big man. And it's such a bad mentality to have, in my opinion, if you're an NBA team, to say, okay, let's just draft James Wiseman. He'll give us 16 and 8, and he'll be, a really solid, regular season NBA big guy. And he'll finish, top 10 of big guys every single year. But then when we go to the playoffs, we're a six seed every year that's just coming off 42 wins, and we're losing 4-1 or we're losing 4-0 in every single series. Like, it's just to draft someone like that high is just it's not a good mentality to have, in my opinion, because there's just some guys that, at least from my evaluation, are not going to be able to just be on the floor come playoff time. Yeah, and it's super important. There's a limited amount of players in the NBA that are really return a lot of value, in the playoffs. And the biggest example for me, or two biggest examples for me, are Marc Gasol and Brook Lopez. Like, they're guys that are a little bit outdated and they probably shouldn't be as good as they are, but they know their role and their skill set, tailors them to be extremely efficient and impactful on really good teams in the playoffs. And that's kind of what you're looking for is, it's a wing heavy, guard heavy league in the NBA right now. So the role of the big man should be to be versatile, not to be a liability, protect the rim, finish plays inside, be active on the offensive glass, and, maybe shoot the ball a little bit, expand your range, open up the floor. And I think that just returns a lot of value. And just knowing positioning too, positioning's huge. Just knowing where to be. You watch Brook Lopez play basketball, he just knows where to be. Like, he's not the most physically athletic guy, but he's just always in the right spot. And that's why he blocks so many shots. And that's why, the Bucks and their system is so successful.
Yeah, that was a perfect fit for him. And
absolutely.
I don't understand. It's like, if you're not going to try to build a winning team, you could take these regular season guys that are not going to be playoff players.
Right.
But my philosophy, if I'm a GM or if I'm part of any organization, is I want to build the best team possible. And so I'm going to place a higher value on the guys that are going to impact winning, even if that's in a small role, like, what Tillman does, for example. He might set screens and box out better than anybody else. And that's going to have value come playoff time.
Right.
Little things like that might have more value than Anthony Edwards is, or Obi Toppin's
shot making, right.
Shot making or pick and pop ability, because his value defensively will be non-existent.
Right.
So it's just like, that's why it's hard to compare. Because when I'm setting my boards now, I'm trying to have, who's going to be the most useful come playoff time, and you rank guys, and it's just like, you want your bigs to be extremely useful playoff bigs, and I don't see the value in taking guys that won't be.
Right.
There's
nothing, and that's kind of like it's literally the Jahlil Okafor thing. Like, you already had a good big on the roster, and you take Okafor, and someone like Okafor, who's a skilled offensive player, is going to put up 20 and 10, and his numbers are going to look solid, but you're going to finish as the worst team in the NBA. And that's a case that is true for a lot of big guys. I'm happy DeAndre Ayton didn't necessarily turn out to be like that. I'm a little bit higher on Ayton, because I thought that was kind of going to be his role coming in. I was worried about that, just his skill set being maximized, putting up great numbers, but never impacting winning. And I do think he does impact winning. I'm with you. Is like, it's almost when you're drafting, it should almost be need second 100%, always who you think is going to impact winning the most. And that's why with the Warriors, there's no way you just go, okay, Wiseman's here, let's take my Wiseman number one or number two or number three, because we have a hole at the center. Like, there's just no way you can do that and say, that's the best possible move for your matter. Right. That's the best possible move for your franchise. It just doesn't work like that. Like, he's just not going to impact winning in the playoffs. I'd much rather would take someone that, you think could impact winning in the playoffs, a 3-and-D guy, Devin Vassell, whatever. I'd probably take Vassell like 100 times out of 100 over Wiseman if I was in the Warriors' shoes.
Yeah. I would too. That value you're talking about is relative to the role they're going to play. So obviously a guy like that's going to be a high volume guy is going to have more perceived value. But if you can find a guy that, like, say say you have a 3 and D guy. I'm just using that because it's a basic archetype. That's a plus one on both ends. And, you know, that's the average, for example. Exactly. If you could find a guy in the draft that, you know, above an Anthony Edwards or James Wiseman, that's going to be a plus two, plus one, or a plus two, plus two, you should take that instead, because you know that's going to be above average value for that position. And you could play that in the playoffs rather than putting in a guy that's going to, you know, he's going to seem like he has a lot of value because he's a big points per game guy, but relative to their usage and impact, you know, their impact's going to be poor.
Right.
So I really wish there was a metric that would measure that. I don't know if player impact plus minus would be the right one for that, but, you know, relative to their usage, I think that's the biggest, you know, that's why I like Killian Tilly so much. He has a really low usage rate, and he has, like, you know, his analytics are, they're off the charts for impact. And that's what I like about him, because he's going to be an elite role player that's going to be better than every other role player in his archetype, for example. So that's my philosophy when it comes to taking any player, but bigs especially.
Right. And I think the thing is, like, you either take Xavier Tillman or you get exposed by Xavier Tillman in the playoffs. And that's the bottom line. It's like, you either have Marc Gasol on your roster in the playoffs, or Marc Gasol is the reason that you're struggling in the playoffs. Like, it's a real thing, but it's true. Like, big guys who are not competent, it's an extremely important archetype, despite the fact that it's, you know, modern guys are outdated at the point in the NBA and wings are more heavily valued. But having big guys that can stay on the floor is arguably just as important, because, you know,
exactly.
You do have,
and just as rare.
Exactly. And if you do have liabilities on that side of the, you know, on that end of the floor, it's tough to make up for. It can change an entire game. And that's definitely why I think just from now on, until I see change in the NBA, I've heard things like, well, you know, with so much small ball being played, like, big guys could be making kind of a return to exploit some of those small ball mismatches. I don't buy that until at least I see it. And then it could be a different conversation for someone like Oturu or Vernon Carey, if that were to happen. But I don't see the landscape of the NBA changing that drastically when so many teams have found success.
Exactly. And, you know, the idea is, oh, we'll exploit it because nobody else is using it. But the whole small ball game came up because of analytics, and people realized that it was more efficient in some lineups to play small. Or not play two bigs and not run so much post offense because it's inefficient comparatively in points per possession. So, you know, numbers won't lie, but you could run a post offense and the guy could probably be successful, but you're not going to win. You're not going to win, like, you know, at a high level, not playing the modern game. Unless you find a new way to, you know,
to exploit mismatches, right?
Yeah, unless your points per possession become greater than, you know, the current
than what it's shown
trends. Yeah, I wouldn't change. I would try to mold around that.
Exactly. But, and that's the biggest talking point I've seen for some guys like Wiseman and others, is like, oh, well, they're going to be mismatch problems. Like, no, they are the mismatch. Like, they're the person that someone's trying to expose. And that's why I tend to be a little bit lower on those kinds of guys, and I think you're the same exact way.
Yeah, especially with Toppin.
Right. We'll see where Toppin ends up, because you made some good points about him, and even just thinking about it here, like, it's a real topic. Like, will he provide enough value to even stay on, like, you know, be on the floor and be a positive contributor? Like, it's that real with his defense. I still don't know.
It is
the best spot for him to fit in other than, you know, hiding on the worst offensive player on the court.
in the corner, yeah.
Right, exactly.
With some weak side rim protection is like your only chance.
Right, we kind of hit it in terms of just the value of big guys in the NBA. Yeah. You either
that's
have
why analytics are important. Or you don't.
Right, exactly. Yeah. All right, so we'll get to questions and then we'll round it out here.
All right.
Number one coming from Dominic Stern. What makes you so low on Oturu? And we kind of answered this, but we'll go over it again. I mean, I think I think with Daniel Oturu is that, you know, he did put up the numbers and he, you know, did show some value to hit threes and expand his range, and he was better than he was in his freshman year this year at Minnesota. But it was on extremely low volume, and from what I've seen watching him play, I just don't ever see a spot unless he makes noticeable improvements. You know where he can impact winning in the NBA, and that's just
I get it. And you know, it's really the archetype that he is that makes him an issue. You know, he can't, first of all, he can't defend in space. I know we already talked about that, but he's going to be a defensive liability when he's not in one-on-one rim protection scenarios. Just every other situation, he's going to be a liability. Yeah, he's going to put up points. Yeah, he's going to put up rebounds, but he's also going to be a higher usage big. That was the style he played at, you know, at Minnesota.
Right.
And higher usage bigs just don't work in the NBA anymore. And when you look at what he's going to be asked to do, you know, he's going to have less of a role on the ball. He's going to be popping more. He's going to ask to roll a lot, you know, be a PNR, PNP kind of threat. And I just don't think he provides enough value there to really stick. I mean, he shot less than two. I think he made.
He was 1.8.
What are his stats? Yeah, he was 19 of 52 from three.
Yeah.
And, you know, career 67% free throw shooter. I just don't see the value he can provide in a lesser role. He's the perfect guy to run an offense through in college when he can dominate physically and be masked defensively.
Right.
But I don't see how that works in the NBA, and that's the issue with his translation, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's just it's translation, and I think that's completely fair. Mm.
Yeah, and that's a hard thing to judge. It really is.
Absolutely. Especially when they're, you know, their productivity is probably not going to match the usage that they're going to have. So coming from Simon here, number two, how soon will Isaiah Stewart become a top five center in the NBA? I don't, you know, honestly, like maybe
he's drafted.
maybe top five of like my favorite centers in the NBA. By the end of his career or by the prime of his career. But in overall skill level, maybe a top five role player. I mean, I don't know. I don't think his skill set would ever match, you know, would ever be maximized to the fact that he's one of the premier big guys in the NBA. But with Isaiah Stewart, the thing I'm buying right now is that he will provide value in some sense to an NBA team.
Yes. Well said. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to provide value, in a lesser role, you know, have value off the court. He's going to, you know, we already really talked about a lot of, you know, what I like about him, but, you know, his intangibles are going to provide winning value, his three-way scoring, if his shot really comes around. That'll be where he provides value. I don't see him as a guy you could run your offense through, you know, and that's really what you need to be a top five center or be a super elite play finisher, rim protector. And I can't see him being either of those, honestly. But I think he could be a strong role player that's going to provide winning value. And that
absolutely.
that has value.
It does. Simon's been on him too for a while too, just on that high motor train. And I don't think I'll ever be like a Isaiah Stewart, like, you know, truther that I think he's going to be this, you know, insane player. But it is fair to say that he could provide really good value on and off the court, which is super important.
Yeah, so. I'm really just coming into he's going to be a really effective role player.
Yeah, and which is fair. And it's something that you honestly, like,
that's on my value.
I think I'm in the same boat as you, is I knocked his, you know, deficiencies so much. And I was so tired of seeing him top 10 that I put him on a spot on my board where it almost wasn't fair to his skill set. Like, he's still, in my opinion, his skill set is still greater than someone of that, you know, he's not a top 10 pick, but he's definitely a top, you know, 45, 50 guy. And he's definitely someone that you should draft at some point in the NBA draft, as long as it's not, as long as it's out of the lottery, which, if that makes sense, because I think that's where I kind of went with him. And then knowing we were going to do this episode, I watched Isaiah a lot this week, alongside Vernon Carey. And I kind of noticed, I was like, well, you know, if he's not going to be this transcendent guy, you know, I still think he has a good chance to provide value in some sense. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And he, that's why he's going to be continuously like moving up our boards. I'm thinking absolutely. As I continue to watch more, I really need to get the defense down, but I'm becoming a fan. And I like what I see regarding his upside as a role player.
Absolutely. Number three here comes from at Nick's Draft Guy. How many bigs in this class do you think will have legitimate long-term NBA careers?
That's a good question. Yeah. I would love to say I'm going to rule out Tilly because of injuries. But if he didn't have any, definitely Killian Tilly. I'd say Okongwu, Jalen Smith. Oh, gosh. Stewart. I think Stewart could have a 10-year career pretty easily, those three.
Yeah.
This is difficult off the top of my head. Xavier Tillman.
Yeah.
Wiseman probably will for upside alone.
Yeah. I'm counting eight.
Poku, I guess.
Yeah, if you count Poku, right.
Yeah, Poku will be 26 in 8 years. Or 28 in 10 years.
Yeah, dude. 27 and 26, crazy. I think. What is that? I saw something. I think he's played 4 games total since he's been 19 years old. 18 years old, that's right. Yeah, because he's 17 before.
Crazy.
He'll be 19 in December. Yeah, that's awesome. I think counting Poku, I would go Okongwu, Poku, Tillman, Jalen Smith, Wiseman, like you said, based off upside, Tilly, if he's able to stay healthy, Najee, and Stewart. That's a solid.
No,
I think that's
Obi Toppin.
That's a safe eight. That's a safe
eight. That's really interesting. No, Obi Toppin.
That's a safe eight. Because you said legitimate long-term NBA careers. I could see all eight of those guys. I could see all eight of those guys carving out long-term NBA careers in some sense, and you know, in any kind of in differing roles. And there's a chance that you know, with what Toppin brings, he's a guy that you know kind of bounces around for a while. But you know, his scoring package would probably keep him around as well. You could probably put him as
eight or nine years. Yeah. I mean, he's going to be, what, like 23? He's one of the older guys. I think he's – was he – God, I wish I had – I don't have his birthday up, but he's a –
He's 22 or 23.
Yeah, in 10 years, he could be 32 years old and – by that time, is that I just don't know, man. That's a question mark. I wouldn't bet on it.
We're gonna have an Obi Toppin special breakdown of this game.
I would be down, honestly, but I don't know. That's a good question. It is a really good question. I don't know if his ability to defend in space would only deteriorate.
Yeah, right.
It's an interesting talking point.
This is like something that I'm like seriously considering. I was like, do you think Obi Toppin will have a legitimate long-term NBA career? And
he might be the bust. He might be the bust of this class as far as you know hype goes and such. Because I don't know if he does have a 10-year career. That's crazy.
Yeah. Certainly opening some eyes with that question. Great question. all great questions per usual. And then our last one from Master of the Unten, Alex Caruso, MVP. Facts. Is there a world where Tillman comes in and plays 24 minutes a night?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I would say so. Maybe I think more 18 to 20 his first year, but 100% by maybe even the end of his rookie season, or
he could play more than that.
24 to 26. I think that's a good number for him. I don't think I'd put him on. He's still best paired with an impact big that needs the ball. I think that's the best pairing for Tillman. He probably won't go to a team like that, but
he's a glue guy, and when you have a glue guy that doesn't need a lot of touches, they can play a lot of minutes because, you know, they can keep the the glue for everybody. They keep everybody melded together.
Keep providing value.
Yeah, they have a way to provide value without needing a ball. That's really valuable. And that means you can move your other pieces in and out, and they can I mean, the value of glue guys is really, really high, in my opinion. I've always been high on them. Yeah, he has potential to definitely play 24 a night. I think he can play 24 in the playoffs eventually.
Rookie season, potentially. I think 18 to 20 in the playoffs is rookie year. But no, in terms of just overall value, I do think 24 minutes a night is very realistic very for reasonable. Xavier Tillman. Very, very, very reasonable. And that's all we got for you guys today. It's pretty decent episode here, just talking about the big guys in this class. I know I've been wanting to get my thoughts on some of these guys off my chest for a while, and there's a lot. I think it will continue to be one of the biggest, you know, talking points going into the draft is why do we have Vernon Carey 46 and I see Bleacher Report and other sites with him at 17 and 15, and why is Obi Toppin 4 for you guys and 57 for Alex? Like I think it's going to be a really big, a really solid talking point. And you know, it's a real thing. Like it actually opened my eyes just reading the question. Like, do you think Obi Toppin will have a legitimate 10-year NBA career? And it's something that, you know, you really have to think about. And you know, when drafting someone like that is his, like you said, is he going to get better in space or worse as he gets a little bit older, right? Like it's interesting. So
yeah, if you made it this far, let us know when we post this what you think about OB's potential career, because I'd love to hear some more thoughts on that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's an interesting talking point. But definitely enjoyable episode. We'll be back again next week with another one. Thinking about talking some maybe potential 2021 class guys, incorporating that into our next episode, which is going to make me a little bit more happy. just because, God,
it's a fun class, man.
Absolutely. It's something to look forward to next year. I mean, there's, I think, 6 to 8 guys that you can make a real case to take number one or number two in this draft, in this year's draft, like straight out of high school. So
I agree.
Definitely keep your eyes out for that. Leave us more questions. We love those. If you like this episode, if you like this podcast, leave us a nice review. We really appreciate it. I've loved the traction that we're getting per usual over these last few weeks, and we'll be back. So take care.
Yep. Take care, guys. Thank you.